Hello and welcome to History for Weirdos.
We're your hosts, Andrew
and Stephanie.
And each week, we're going to take you on a journey into the strange, obscure, and relentlessly entertaining corners of human history.
Now listen up, friends, because it's about to get weird.
Welcome, weirdos, to episode 125 of History for Weirdos.
Is it actually episode 125?
It is. I checked right before this.
Really?
Yeah. I realized we hadn't been saying it for a while, and I wanted to spice things up a bit.
I totally lost track of the number of episodes. Numbers mean nothing to me. We all know this.
Yeah, that's true. I'm the numbers person in this relationship. Also, weirdos, I wanted to wish you all a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, weirdos.
To especially all the people who are either Irish or have Irish ancestry.
Yeah.
And everyone else too.
And everyone else.
It's a fun holiday.
It's definitely a different holiday in the US with Irish Americans than it is in Ireland. But nevertheless, we hope you all had a happy and safe St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
Because I just realized when they're listening to this, it's not St. Patrick's Day.
That is true. We are recording actually on St. Patrick's Day right now. So I'm hoping to send you that like that green energy, that positive
green energy.
I don't know, because St. Patrick's Day, it's just green.
Or else you get pinched. That's right.
I mean, I'm literally wearing green right now.
As am I.
In fact, fun plug, if you see us on our Patreon, you'll be able to just witness the whole episode, us talking right at you.
You can see us wearing green.
Yeah, so you know we're not lying.
Yeah.
No.
Speaking of St. Patrick, he is the patron saint of Ireland.
Yes.
And today's episode is going to be on another patron saint of a country.
Oh, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I know what this episode is about, but I'm very curious to hear more about it.
Yeah, this week we're going to be covering the life and achievements and legacy of Joan of Arc.
Man, that is so cool. This is someone that is, I mean, she's always in the back of our minds as someone who is one of the most legendary figures of all of history.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm really interested because I don't know a lot about her.
Yeah.
I definitely played a video game once where it was like a whole campaign and you can control her armies.
Really?
Yeah.
What video game was that?
I think it was Age of Empires 2.
Is that the one where you learned a lot about like ancient history as well?
Funny enough, it was the prequel to this one.
Oh, okay.
So it was the first Age of Empires, yeah.
What an educational video game.
It gave me this disease that is an obsession with history.
It's a disease we all love you for.
Thank you so much.
So we'll take it. But yeah, I want to preface this episode by saying this is longer for me. I tend to write the shorter episodes between the two of us. This is a longer episode, I think. We'll see, I guess. And it's still very much so an extremely abridged version of her story. And there's even more of an extremely abridged summary of the Hundred Years' War. It's a lot of information.
It's well documented, so that's why.
Yes.
It's a ton of information.
We have lots of letters and like quote legal, you know, court documents, papal documents, lots of stuff like that. So there was a ton of information, and I just wanted to not get bogged down too much.
Right.
I think you're all gonna really love this, and I also want to give a big thank you to Felicia.
Yes.
She's a super weirdo in our Patreon. That's one of the tiers that you can join. And she sent us research articles for this episode. And oh my God, these were really cool sources.
Yeah, thank you so much, Felicia.
Yeah.
This was really cool.
We really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. I love how she wrote in the email, hi, Steph. And then in parentheses, okay, I know Andrew's really the one reading this.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So Felicia, you know us well. Thank you.
Yeah.
We appreciate you. And let's get into it. Let's talk about Joan of Arc.
Honestly, can't wait.
Also, Andrew and I are both a little caffeinated, so.
Yes, this is true.
We'll try to keep the ADHD tangents in check.
No guarantees.
No guarantees here, though. That's for sure. Okay.
So true.
So, Joan of Arc, also known as Jeanne or Jean, like spelled J-E-A-N-N-E.
So not Billie Jean.
Not Billie Jean. Jeanne d'Arc is the patron saint of France. She emerged during a pivotal period in medieval history, which is a... We've covered it before, but we don't tend to cover a lot of medieval history, I've noticed.
Yeah, we don't.
She said that she was guided by God and ended up leading armies as a teenager, breaking the mold of what women were expected to do. And she was really seen as a heroine of France, like a savior figure. So Joan of Arc was born in 1412 in Domrémy, France. I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
To a peasant family. The date of her birthday is unknown, which is common for the time. Her parents were Jacques d'Arc and Isabelle Romy. Very French sounding name.
So French.
Joan had three brothers and a sister.
Aww.
So she was also born during the Hundred Years' War between England and France, which had started in 1337 over more or less the status of English territories in France, as well as English claims to the French throne.
Yes, that's correct. We actually even covered a bit of this in more detail in our episode on Edward the Black.
Yeah, you did that episode.
Yeah, and I don't remember the number, but it was a little while back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was another time where we were in the same time period. So during the Hundred Years' War, nearly all of the fighting had taken place in France, which really devastated France's economy. At the time of Joan's birth, France was pretty divided politically, and this is the part where I'm going to get into a very abridged summary of the politics of the Hundred Years' War.
Fair enough.
It was over 100 years, you guys. There's a lot to cover there.
I know you quizzed me on this earlier. It was like 116 years, right? If I remember correctly.
Yes, you're correct. That's actually how long it was.
Wow.
Look at you.
Look at me. So awesome.
Our friends often say, weirdos, that Andrew should go on like a game show, like a trivia game show. And I totally agree.
Useless facts. I'm your man.
Yes. They're not useless to me.
Aww.
I love them.
That's adorable.
So the French king, Charles VI, was also known as Charles the Mad. He had recurring bouts of mental illness, which weakened his rule for sure.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't stoked on him, I think is the political term.
Right. I think you're right about that one.
So the king's brother, Louis, or Louis, if you're reading it in English, was the Duke of Orléans, and his cousin, John the Fearless, was the Duke of Burgundy, and they fought over who would take over the Regency of France.
Ooh, I see.
So Charles the Mad, mm-hmm. his brother, and his cousin.
Wow, just all duking it out.
Well, Charles the Mad's just, I think, off being king that's...
like crazy.
Mentally ill without proper treatment or information or understanding to support his needs.
I am so sorry. Okay.
Then in 1407, the Duke of Burgundy, so John the Fearless, the cousin, he ordered the assassination of the Duke of Orléans, the king's brother.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty brazen.
That's really brazen. It brought on a civil war.
That is unsurprising.
So then there was another Charles. I feel like...
Oh my God, there's going to be like just a million Charles and Louis.
Yeah. There's another Charles of Orléans also, and he succeeded his father. So his dad gets assassinated. Little Charles succeeds as Duke, and he's only 13. So like, what the fuck's he going to do? I mean, yeah, what the heck?
I mean...
Sorry.
That just like came out. That came right out. That was from the heart. We're not editing that out.
Sorry, guys. We're like a 13-year-old. What's he going to do?
Right.
So he gets put into the custody of a count, right? Like he has sort of like an adult looking over his dukeship, his
duchy.
And the supporters of little Charles become known as Armagnacs.
Interesting.
Armagnacs, while supporters of the Duke of Burgundy become known as Burgundians.
Okay, well, that second one makes a lot more sense. I don't understand the first one, though.
It's because the count that he's in the custody of is the Count of Armagnac.
Oh, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
So then...
Yes.
So then Henry V of England exploited this internal division within France. And he's like, oh my God, while they're fighting over the French Regency, I'm going to invade. Which is pretty smart.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah.
And this really was smart. He invaded in 1415. And then the Burgundians were like, oh no, we got to do something. So they take over Paris in 1418. So everything, all of France is like chopped up and really chaotic right now.
Correct. Yes.
That is the picture I wanted to paint.
Yeah. So it's not a fun time in France.
A lot of strife, a lot of chaos, and of course, economic depression during that time. But we're going to get back to Joan for a little bit right now.
Okay.
So in her youth, Joan did household chores, she spun wool, she helped her father in the fields and looked after the animals. Typical peasant girl vibes. Mm-hmm. What the youth would call cottagecore.
Cottagecore. So she was really into cottagecore before it got trendy.
Yeah, she was living the cottagecore lifestyle.
But then she's like, I want to live that like Julius Caesar lifestyle though.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Nice.
Her mom would have provided her religious education, which is, when we think of religious education for peasants of this time, it's their only education, really.
Correct, right.
They're not taught to read, write, do math, but they are taught a lot about the Bible. They are taught a lot about the church, Jesus, things like that. And it was just a really important part of their lives. And that becomes a very important part of Joan's destiny, really. So in this region that she lived, Domremy, it was in the Duchy of Bar. And this is a place where it was surrounded by the Burgundian land.
Okay.
The people who were loyal to the Duke of Burgundy. But its people were actually loyal to the Armagnac cause.
Okay. So
a lot of tension. Then by 1419, the war had really affected the area. And in 1425, her town, specifically Domremy, was attacked and all the cattle were stolen.
No, not the cows.
Yeah, not the cows. This led to, obviously, a very upset sentiment among the villagers. And they hated the English. They really saw the English as the reason for their suffering and the strife in the country, which isn't entirely true.
It's only partly true.
It's only partly true, but I can understand how that's an easier conclusion to come to.
Right, especially if you're a medieval peasant, you're not really focused on like international politics.
Wow, that's a hot take.
Hot take, I know. you're just like hoping to not die.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Their world was very much so still focused on just surviving. So when this attack happened, though, is when Joan has her first vision.
Oh, snap. And then like history is made.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read you a quote from that Joan gave at one of her trials that she's at, where she talks about the visions herself. So this is in Joan's words.
Okay.
I was 13 when I had a voice from God helped for my help and guidance. The first time that I heard this voice, I was very much frightened. I heard this voice to my right. Rarely do I hear it without it being accompanied also by a light. This light comes from the same side as the voice.
Really interesting.
Very, very interesting. Joan also later testified that around 1425, a figure that she identified as St. Michael was surrounded by angels and appeared to her in the garden. After this vision, she said that she wept because she wanted the angels to take her with them. Throughout her life, she has these visions. She has visions of St. Michael, who was a patron saint of the Domremy area. And he was also seen as like, he wasn't the patron saint of France, but he was seen as like a French defender. She stated that she had these visions frequently and often had them when the church bells were rung. Her visions also included St. Margaret and St. Catherine. And although she never specified, because there's a few Margarets and Catherines in the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. They were probably Margaret of Antioch and Catherine of Alexandria, based on historians picking up context clues. So if you are, I don't know, maybe somewhat cynical like me, first question you might ask yourself is this young woman hearing and seeing God and angels and saints, or does she have a mental illness going on?
That was my first inclination, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that a little bit. The question of whether or not Joan of Arc had a mental illness is still debated amongst historians and scholars, some arguing that her visions and actions could be interpreted as symptoms of two conditions. One is schizophrenia. The second is temporal lobe epilepsy. I could speak a little bit to the schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. I have experience working with schizophrenia. That was the first thing I thought of because of her age. She was about 13, I think, when she started having these, to me, visual and auditory hallucinations.
Right.
That's typical. That's a little bit early onset, but it's within typical onset for schizophrenia. And hallucinations are when we see or hear things that aren't there. I think what she described would sound like a hallucination to most modern people, at least. She also has delusions, I would think, being, we'll get to this in a little bit. She believes she's a prophesized savior of France. She makes that argument quite frequently. So one could interpret them as delusions. But I will say that we don't see any thought disorders, meaning that her thoughts, aside from these perceived delusions and hallucinations, are linear and logical.
Right.
No one's saying that she's like really difficult to understand or she seems disorganized in her thinking. We also don't see any movement symptoms. Sometimes schizophrenia will make people's movements really stiff or really erratic. That's not described anywhere either. And then, according to one article by researchers Nicastro and Picard, they believe in the epilepsy theory because her episodes had a sudden onset. They would last seconds to minutes at most, typical with an epileptic seizure, and they occurred whether she was awake or asleep, and they were triggered by auditory stimulus, the bells ringing. Seizures are usually triggered by something. We know a common one is like strobe lights. Mm-hmm. They didn't have strobe lights in the medieval times.
They weren't throwing raves.
Mm-hmm.
Joan of Arc wasn't just going, nts, 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 nts.
I bet she would have if she could have.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe not. You're right. But sounds can also trigger epilepsy. So they think that possibly the auditory stimulus of the church bells could have triggered that. They also note that she had no disorganized thoughts in between these episodes.
These are really good notes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I know. I meant like back in the day, they take really copious amount of like.
Oh, I thought you like meant my notes were good.
I mean, your notes are very good as well. Yes.
She's interrogated a lot.
Oh, right.
She's interrogated multiple times throughout her life. We will get to that. So that's why we have so much information on her and her experience of these, what the Catholic Church would call, and I'm sure the Orthodox Church as well, they're known as ecstatic religious experiences. Many saints in sort of like the pantheon of the church are known for having ecstatic religious experiences. Mm. Another famous French one is Saint Thérèse de Lisieux, who is compared to Joan of Arc in one of the articles that Felicia sent over because they have similar experiences of God, of all of a sudden being overcome by lights, by sound, and just this feeling that God is present.
Really interesting.
So throughout history, we have a ton of Christians reporting these same sort of experiences, right? They say that the reason that her auditory and visual hallucinations would have a religious context is simply because of what we touched on earlier.
Right.
In that religion, the Catholic faith specifically, would have been such a big part of her life and the only education she would have received.
Right. So it makes sense for her to like interpret these sort of feelings as part of her like upbringing.
Yeah, exactly.
So the only thing she really knows.
Yeah. Like if someone grows up in an entirely different environment that doesn't have any sort of like religious beliefs or connotations to it, they may not develop hallucinations that have any sort of religious tone to them.
Right.
But I will say, while some of us may speculate illness, others do believe that her experiences were genuine because she is so put together in between her ecstatic religious experiences.
Right. Like, she's putting together, well, I guess I won't jump the gun, but she does quite a bit of organizing as a child.
As a child, yeah.
Like, that's insane.
And people say that only true faith and true belief would have given her the conviction and determination to fulfill what she saw as her divine mission. But I totally understand that argument too.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to consider that I mentioned earlier, Charles VI was considered mentally ill at the time, right? They are contemporaries. He is reported as having hallucinations, erratic behavior, and disorganized thoughts. That's why a lot of people didn't trust and have faith in him as a king. But that's not what they record about Joan. So I do think it's interesting. They knew what mental illness looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't seem to be reporting this young woman seems to have what the king has.
Right. I mean, that's really interesting. So it's you have the same people saying, OK, with the king, he is exhibiting these negative behavioral traits, right, that Joan of Arc is not having.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It's not even like, oh, well, it's different groups of people judging different folks. No, it's the same group of people judging two different folks.
Yes.
They're contemporaries. So it's like it seems like we have like almost, I wouldn't say proof necessarily, but a pretty good assumption that we can make is that she didn't have schizophrenia.
The juxtaposition of the two is very interesting.
Yeah.
Because you would think that as the king, the reports of him would be more flattering. And as a peasant girl, people would be more critical.
Right. She's just a woman, you know?
Just a woman. A peasant at that, you know?
Exactly.
But the king did have... Unfortunately, he experienced paranoia, which is really common with schizophrenia. Yeesh. It did lead to some violent outbursts. She doesn't have any of that.
And also, doesn't schizophrenia typically manifest later? Like around like 18 years old?
No. It can manifest at 13.
Oh, okay.
It's different for everyone. It can be triggered earlier if you experience trauma earlier. It could never be triggered. You could be genetically predisposed and for whatever reason just doesn't come up. Women, though, there is a trend that women tend to experience the first onset a little later than men. Men tend to experience it younger.
Interesting.
A lot of the veterans I worked with, the guys, they had their first onsets at like 13.
Oh.
But they obviously didn't know what it was at the time.
Right. I mean, you're a 13-year-old.
Yeah. So there's also like, does everyone hear and see this? I don't know. So I think considering this comparison between Joan of Arc and King Charles VI, I think either her experiences were genuine and there's just certain things we don't understand, or I'm more inclined actually to lean towards the theory of temporal lobe epilepsy.
I agree. I agree completely, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah, squant. I have no further thoughts.
No notes?
No notes on that.
Well, ultimately, I will say all of this is speculation, of course. There's no definitive evidence to conclusively prove or disprove whatever may have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We're speculating from a very different world, too. We're looking back where they just had different standards for what's normal, what's abnormal. And so at the end of the day, we'll never know.
Right.
We'll never know.
Man, and doesn't that bug you?
A little bit. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I was about to say, and that's okay, but it does bug me.
It is okay. It's not like it's materially changing our lives, but it just bugs me. Mm-hmm. I just want to know. It's just like the part of me that just needs to know things.
I bet a lot of weirdos can relate.
Yeah.
I bet a lot of weirdos can relate.
You guys, yeah, that's probably why you're listening.
That's probably why we're all here.
Yeah.
So... that was my little personal analysis of her mental state. I want to get back to something I briefly mentioned within that, which is this prophecy.
Ooh.
So during Joan's youth, a prophecy was circulating around the French countryside, and it was based on the visions of a seer named Marie Robin of Avignon.
Avignon.
Sorry for the French accent, guys. I need to practice.
You're great.
She promised that an armed virgin would come forth to save France.
That is so weird.
Or France.
France.
As some say. Another prophecy, which is attributed to Merlin, which I think is really interesting, stated that a virgin carrying a banner would put an end to France's suffering.
Wow.
Joan implied that she was this promised virgin or maiden. She used the word maiden mostly, reminding the people around her that there was this sort of belief that a virgin would restore France. She used that as an argument of like, you guys should listen to me because I'm definitely the girl from the prophecy.
Interesting. Okay, that makes a lot of sense, because I knew you were going to cover it, but like, how does she get people to just follow her?
Yeah, we're going to get into that even more.
Okay, good.
But I just wanted to insert here also an obligatory eye roll.
She literally did it, guys.
At the worshiping of female virginity. That's so...
I was waiting for this. I was like, Stephanie has thoughts and I want to hear them.
You don't need to be a virgin just because you're a woman to save France. You can save France and not be a virgin. That's my crazy hot take.
I mean, not according to the prophecy.
Thanks, babe. Thanks for your support.
Yeah, you got it. Anytime.
It's honestly the biggest ick ever that Christianity has.
Oh my God.
This obsession with female virginity is so asinine. It drives me crazy.
It's so funny. Like, I mean, I agree with you, but it's just funny, like, seeing you get so worked up over it. I'm like, oh boy, guys, you should get some popcorn. It's coming.
I'm holding it in. I just needed to mention that that's dumb for anyone who maybe thought it wasn't dumb.
Yeah.
So, getting back to the story, led by the voices of her saints, Joan traveled in May of 1428 from Domrémy to Vaucouleurs, I think is how you say it, the nearest stronghold, still loyal to the Dauphin. The Dauphin is like the crown prince of France, right, where she asked the captain of the garrison, a Robert de Baudricot, for permission to join the Dauphin. She just shows up to this garrison. She's a teenager. She's like, hey, can you actually like get me to the Dauphin, please? I have to talk to him. And the guy's like, no.
No, you crazy little girl.
She's 16 at this time. He's like, no, you have to go home. So he sends her home, right? It's understandable.
Understandable. I'd be like, where are your parents?
But she comes back again in January of 1429, this time even more firm, and shares her piety and shares the visions that she's had and tells him, no, like, because of these visions, because God and the saints are talking to me, I really need to talk to the Dauphin.
Okay, can you imagine just being this guard and having this like crazy 16 or 17 maybe now girl come up to you and just say those things? I'd be like, okay, what? Girl,
where's
like,
your mom?
Yeah, where's your mom? Get off the pipe. Like, what are you doing? Like, get your life together.
What have you been smoking in the fields, young lady?
Yeah, seriously.
But her people, like the people of her town, really respected her at this point because she was like really making this argument that she was the prophesied savior. They believed her, so a ton of people went with her. And the guard was just like, or the captain of the garrison was like, okay, I'm pretty sure you're not a witch. And he notes that he didn't think she was feeble-minded, which is interesting.
Right.
And he's like, sure, I'll take you to the Dauphin and we'll see if he even wants to talk to you. So the Dauphin at this point is at Chinon, another town. I don't know where that is.
Okay.
So they leave Vaucouleurs in February. And they have her dressed in men's... She chooses to dress in men's clothes and is accompanied by 6 armed guards. She's crossing territory held by the enemy. And they're traveling for 11 days. Just this, like, 17-year-old girl and a ton of armed guards. just going through a war zone, basically.
This literally sounds like an absurd fan fiction.
Because she's so adamant that she was a prophesied savior and she needed to go talk to the crown prince. And they're like, well, I guess we got to do this.
Okay.
Fascinating, right? So she gets to the castle where Dauphin Charles is hanging out. He's initially uncertain, understandably, whether to receive her. His counselors give him conflicting advice, and they talk about it for 2 days.
Oh my God. That's like a minute conversation at most. Yay or nay. Yeah. It's like, should I see this woman or not? Like, it's up to the king to decide. It's really like the bigger decision is like after she speaks. It's more of just
what do
like,
we do? Yeah.
Yeah. What do we do? Okay. Like, come on. It's like faster decision making, guys. Come on. This is ridiculous.
Well,
that's my like ADHD, like get shit done.
Yeah.
Like mode, like just kicking in. Like, come on, make the decision. Like, it's better just to make a decision, whether it's the wrong one, than just to make no decision at all. Just keep on kicking the can down the road.
If I were Joan, I would have gotten bored and left.
Yeah.
In those 2 days.
Same.
I would have been like, oh my God, never mind.
Yeah, no, our ADHD would not allow us to stay that long.
Mm-hmm. But 2 days later, he finally grants her an audience. And to test her, to test like how legit she is, he hides himself, dresses in like plain clothes, amongst his courtiers, like the people at court, to see if she can pick out which one is him.
Why does that
matter? I don't know.
Yeah.
But she immediately picks him out. She's like, oh, there you are. Hi. So I really need to tell you something. I am a prophesied savior.
Yeah. I'm a
and you need to give me an army. I don't know how to tell you this.
Like yesterday.
Mm-hmm. She tells him everything and that she wants to lead a battle against the English and she will have him crowned as the king at Reims. Very bold, especially for a random peasant to say to her crown prince, right?
Okay, is she like...
And she's a teenager.
Is she a neurodivergent, you think?
Maybe.
I mean, this is some neurodivergence right here, I feel like. It's giving me strong vibes.
Very possible.
Yeah.
Very possible. The Dauphin talks to her, hears what she has to say, and then he's like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. So he has her interrogated by ecclesiastical authorities, so like church authorities.
Mm.
She's taken to, they take her somewhere else, Poitiers, for 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
And that's one of the first places that she's interrogated and they're asking her all about her visions and what did God say and what did St. Michael say, what does St. Catherine say, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
So she tells the old religious dudes that she's like, you guys, you can ask me all the questions you want, but you're not going to get proof of it here. You will get proof of what I'm saying once I get that army.
Just give me the army. No, I love her. Like, this is the... No pun intended, the absolute balls, like, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, I mean, I cannot imagine the gall to do something like this, especially as a literal child.
And in their report, the churchmen suggest that, you know what, we're pretty desperate.
What's the worst that could happen?
Literally. Why not? That's their answer. Sure, I guess why not?
I mean, okay, this doesn't sound real. This sounds absurd.
It sounds like someone wrote fan fiction.
Yes.
Of medieval war. And
they had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, but this is what happened.
They had like zero understanding of anything.
So basically they're like, sure, why not? And the Dauphin is like, okay.
Cool.
Once she's given the okay, Joan chops off her hair. And she begins only wearing, quote, men's clothing. Pants, probably.
Pants.
Which I'm currently wearing right now. She's given a small army, as you do give to 17-year-olds, a household, and a squire.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
They even let two of her brothers, Jean and Pierre, come hang out and join her.
Jean-Pierre?
Mm-hmm. We have a friend named Jean-Pierre.
I know, but it's one person.
One person, but this is Jean and Pierre.
Okay.
So then she has her standard, which is a large military flag of the time. Mm-hmm. It would just like, you see it in movies of like old battles, like someone's holding a flag.
Right.
It just usually indicates where you're from, like what team you're fighting for. But she had hers.
What team?
Is that not it?
I'm your on, allegiance.
I'm on this team. Blue team. Red team. No?
I mean, it's basically, yeah.
Well, she had hers painted with an image of Christ in judgment. And then she had a banner that just says, like, Jesus on it.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
That sounds so cringe now.
I know. And then her men are like, here you go. Here's a sword. And she's like, no, I don't want that sword. And they're like, okay, what sword do you want? And she's like, there's a sword waiting for me in St. Catherine's church. Because you know how St. Catherine talks to me? There's a sword in her church. So they're like, okay, I guess we're going to go to the church.
This sounds so insane. This sounds batshit.
Well, guess what?
There was a sword, wasn't there? Oh, my God. Yeah. This is. I bet they were just like, okay, no, like this is wild.
Is legit.
This is legit.
Yep. So they get her sword, and she starts very famously sending letters to the English before going into battle, apparently in an attempt to reason with them to just leave France peacefully.
That's really kind of her.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read a little bit of the first letter that Joan of Arc sent to the English commanders at Orléans. This one is dated March 22nd, 1492. But that's when she had it written.
But 1429.
Oh, 1429. Yeah. I must have inverted them.
Yeah.
Sorry, friend. I do that.
Yeah.
Andrew knows. But for some reason, I don't know why, this really bothered me. She wrote it on March 22nd. The source noted that they didn't like send it out until April 22nd.
That's so weird. So they just sat there for like a month?
For a month. I don't know why. And since Joan never learned to read or write except her signature, she dictated this letter to a clergyman. It's really long, so I'm only going to share two excerpts from this. I think it's interesting. At the top of the letter, she had the clergyman write Jesus plus Mary. This was like a slogan of her. She always wrote that on her letters or had someone write that. So it starts Jesus plus Mary and then King of England and you, Duke of Bedford, who call yourself Regent of the Kingdom of France. You, William Pole, Count of Suffolk, John Talbot, and you, Thomas Lord Scales, who call yourselves Lieutenants of the said Duke of Bedford, make satisfaction to the King of Heaven. Surrender to the maid who is sent here by God, the King of Heaven, the keys of all the good towns which you have taken and violated in France. She has come here by God's will to reclaim the blood royal. She is very ready to make peace if you are willing to grant her satisfaction by abandoning France and paying for what you have held. So she's like, get out and you owe us money.
Oh my God.
Because you've effed up so much.
This is incredible.
And then she closes it more or less with, or no, this is a little bit later in the letter. Like I said, it's long. She writes, quote, I shall make them leave, and in whether they will or not, and if they will not obey, I will have them all put to death. I am sent here by God, the King of Heaven, body for body, to drive you out of France.
Oh my God.
And if they wish to obey, I will show mercy and be not of another opinion, for you will not hold the kingdom of France from God, the King of Heaven, the son of Saint Mary, for the King Charles, the true heir, will hold it, as is revealed to him by the maid. He will enter Paris with a good company. Basically, she says, leave peacefully or else.
More or less, yeah. Or else I'll kill you.
Or else I'll kill you all.
Kill you all. I can only imagine, like, the reaction.
Can you imagine the English receiving these letters?
They probably bust up laughing.
Probably.
I mean, it sounds insane.
It sounds insane. A girl who's from a peasant class, so she can't write them herself.
Right, she had to have it dictated.
She's threatening them.
I will kill you all if you don't leave.
Yeah, I will kill you all.
I'm sent here by God. And God commands it.
I'm the maid that God sent to save France. Or as you would say it, France.
France.
I think she's so fascinating. I don't know where she got this level of conviction and confidence. I guess from God. Now that I think about it.
That makes sense.
In response, the English are not down to leave.
I'm not surprised.
So Joan and her God Squad set off to fend off the siege of Orléans in, oh yeah, I wrote the date right here, in March of 1429.
I figured, babe.
She's dressed in white armor and riding a white horse.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Isn't that a cool
image?
That's
some good branding right there, if
I
do say so.
She was all about the branding, the aesthetic. Joan led several French assaults against the enemy, driving the Anglo-Burgundians, you know, they had teamed up, from their stronghold and forcing their retreat across the Loire River. Basically, she kicked butt. She drove them out.
Oh my God. Imagine being the commander of the other army and be like, yeah, I lost to a 17-year-old girl.
Who's never done this before.
Like, literally, she's never fought in a battle.
After such a miraculous victory, Joan's reputation spread far and wide.
Yeah.
She and her followers then escorted Charles the Dauphin, so little Charles, across enemy territory to Reims, taking towns that, any towns that resisted because they had loyalty to the other side, they took them by force. And then she enabled his coronation on July of 1429.
Wow.
So just like she said to him, she's like, you got to give me an army and I'll make sure you get crowned.
And that's exactly what happened. She manifested that.
She did.
I mean, yeah, because God was like, I will, you must do it.
Mm-hmm. After Charles's coronation, Joan tells him, like, we should keep pressing our advantage, like, kind of keep the ball rolling, and we can retake Paris. But Charles ignored her because he had a favorite homie at court named George's.
Stupid George's.
I think it's just French for George, but it looks like George's.
Yeah.
Georges de la Tremoille or whatever. He was like...
whatever.
He was like, I feel like Joan... Like, can I just say something? I feel like Joan's becoming too powerful.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he planted seeds of doubt in the king that Joan... The people liked her more, that she was the powerful and she was the one leading the army. Like, I wouldn't give her any more opportunities for glory.
Wow. That's pretty crappy.
Yeah. So he says no. And therefore, the Anglo-Burgundians were able to fortify their positions and recoup their soldiers. And it wasn't until the spring of the next year when their forces were getting so strong again that he, the king, told Joan to stop them. Could you actually, like, get back out there and stop them?
No.
So, she tries to protect the town of, I think it's Compiègne, is how you would say it.
Mm-hmm.
She's fighting against the Anglo-Burgundian forces, and she falls off her horse.
Oh, no.
She gets left outside of the... This is a medieval town, so it has gates, it has walls. The gates are shut once she's fallen off her horse, and the Burgundians caught her and brought her to the castle of Bouvroy, where the English commander in Rouen was staying. Joan of Arc was now a prisoner of war.
No, this is not good. This is really not good for her.
Yeah.
Because I know what happens.
Yeah. So now that they have this teenager captive that's been really causing trouble for them, they see her as a threat on many fronts, right? She's been a threat in terms of the military battles because she's really obviously very good at this. But she's also a threat because of what she represents and what she represents to the French people, what she represents to the peasants, right? Which is that God wants the English out of France so badly that he's helping this teenage girl get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And most of all, having her in their clutches, they want to discredit Charles because he technically owes his coronation to her, right?
Right.
So to discredit Charles and to discredit Joan, they put her on a trial. And I'm using air quotes.
Right. It's a showcase trial.
With 70 charges against her.
Oh, my God. Total banana court.
Banana court?
Yeah, banana court. Yeah.
Is it a... Oh, kangaroo court.
Kangaroo court. Yeah, I was thinking of Banana Republic. Yeah, Banana Republic, kangaroo court.
Mm-hmm. Some of the charges include witchcraft because she's a woman. And anytime women did anything in European history,
she's a witch.
Yeah, they were witches. Witchcraft, heresy, and dressing like a man was a charge.
Well, I guess she was guilty of that one. I didn't know that was a crime, but it was guilty.
And in an attempt to distance himself from an accused heretic and witch, King Charles does nothing to negotiate her release. He abandons her.
Dude, I don't like this guy. This Dauphin.
Dauphin?
I hate this Dauphin. Sounds like a little bitch.
We are so saucy this episode, and I think it's the coffee.
It's definitely the coffee and the caffeine. Also, I had a few Guinnesses earlier.
So you're just...
I'm having a great time. Yeah. I'm in my zone.
You know who this Charles reminds me of?
Ooh, who?
The Bonnie Prince.
Oh, that guy, not a fan.
We do not like the Bonnie Prince here.
No, we are not stans.
So she's totally abandoned. You'd think, the king will send someone on behalf of him or send the army that she was leading. No one's allowed to help her.
Lame.
So in May of 1431, after a year of captivity under threat of death, Joan relents and she agrees to sign a confession denying that she ever received divine guidance.
It took her a year.
A year. Think of that level of resolve.
And it's probably a lot of torture going on.
Yes, I'm sure she's starving and dirty and cold.
And she probably hasn't had like a good day in ever
since.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Several days later, however, after she signs this confession, she defies orders by once again wearing men's clothes. And authorities grab her. And she is immediately sentenced to death for wearing men's clothes.
So there's like overreactions and then there's this.
And then there's this. Like, come on. I thought the big deal was that she was working for God and that's what was spooking you. But no, it was the pants. That's what really got you.
No, she was wearing pants. She deserves to die.
Exactly. So on the morning of May 30th, 1431 at this point, at the age of 19, Joan was taken to the old marketplace of Rouen, and she was burned at the stake, burned alive.
Oh, I know. It sucks. Like, I knew this was going to happen. I was like, come on, escape it.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
What's a fun personal fact, weirdos, is that I went there as a senior in high school when I was 18.
Wow, you were like almost the same age.
Yeah, I thought about that while we were there. It blew my mind. I was like, she was a year older than I am now, and she led armies? Like, that's crazy. I will be lucky to graduate high school this year. We were on different levels, obviously.
Just a little bit.
So the Hundred Years' War ended about 44 years later. So Joan's put to death. Guess what, Charles? She can't freaking save France like she told you she would because you let her die. So 44 years later, the Treaty of Picquigny, I think is how you say it, was signed in 1475. This treaty was negotiated between King Louis XI of France and King Edward IV of England. So although the treaty marked the end of the major hostilities between England and France, there were still sporadic conflicts, which continued for decades afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, and on and off for like centuries.
Yeah. So as we mentioned earlier, the Hundred Years' War was technically 116 years long.
Right. And it was multiple conflicts really kind of lumped into one.
Yes. That's a very good way of explaining it. Even after Joan died, her fame only grew.
I can see why.
20 years after her death, Charles ordered a new trial that proved she was innocent.
Dude, I hate this guy. This guy is the worst. He is not. He's just a boo.
He's like, oh no, see, we found her innocent. See, I'm a good friend now.
What a piece of garbage, honestly.
I agree. But long before she was officially recognized as innocent and things like that, the people loved her. like the common person in France loved her and saw her as a French savior, even though she technically wasn't able to complete her mission. Mm. And then Pope Benedict the...
The 15th.
15th, thank you.
I'm the one who's going to read Roman numerals here.
He declared her a saint in 1920.
Oh, no way.
She was already seen as a legendary figure, but this sort of made it legit. And she inspired many works of art, books, movies, TV shows over the year. Apparently, there's a very classic silent film called The Passion of Joan of Arc, which I didn't know about.
I didn't know that either. So it took them like basically 500 years for her to be a saint.
Yeah, that's common.
Yeah.
It usually takes a really long time.
Damn, 500 years.
The canonization process is very long. I think...
Do you think you'll be a saint?
Absolutely not. there's no way. If you listen to this podcast, you understand the critiques I have against the church. And I don't think they like that.
No, and weirdos, just to be very clear, Stephanie is also Catholic. So it's not like she's going out of her way to criticize some like another religion. It's her own.
That's very true.
Yes,
yeah,
so I just want to make sure that's clear.
We did get a message once, remember, from someone that was like, Stephanie's anti-Catholic commentary is like not chill.
Yeah, and it's like, guys, she's literally Catholic.
We are allowed to hold multiple truths.
Right, and also hold like a... You know, hold an organization to higher standards.
I am very proudly American, and I definitely have major critiques on how our government is running this country.
Right.
I'm sure many people do.
Yeah, I feel like if you don't, you're not actually patriotic. Like, true patriotism is like...
We could do better.
Yeah, like, let's mm-hmm. do better. Like, this sucks. Like, you just also to admit, like, wow, this... Our current system blows.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with saying that.
I agree. That's why we're together.
No.
Yeah. So there's even a statue of Joan in the Notre Dame Cathedral, which I don't remember seeing, but now I really want to go see it. She's portrayed, and it was put there by another pope, Pope Pius the 10th, I think. It was to celebrate...
So many Piuses.
Yeah. To celebrate her... as a heroine of the church. Mm-hmm. And eventually she became known as the patron saint of France.
Very nice.
Despite facing persecution and ultimately martyrdom, Joan's legacy endured, solidifying her as a national heroine and a timeless symbol of courage, conviction, and the power of the human spirit.
Oh, so beautifully said.
Thank you. The end.
Beautiful, beautiful. Honestly, did not know that much about Joan of Arc. That was surprising.
Right? I thought a lot, like, again, this was kind of just like a summary, but it was so interesting.
I forgot how young she was. That was another thing. I didn't realize she was only 19.
She didn't even make it to 20, which is crazy.
She was a teenager. I mean, even Alexander the Great, right, died when he was 32.
Very young.
Like, very, that's very young. This is like, I mean.
Think of what she would have done if she hadn't been captured, if she hadn't fallen off her horse.
Right, and especially if you're like, she's going to live another like 50 years, let's just say, it'd be.
France might have looked really different.
Yeah, that's very true.
Really interesting. And for this week, my sources, the first three that I'm going to mention are three of the ones sent to us by Felicia. So thank you again. The first is an article called Joan of Arc, Sanctity, Witchcraft, or Epilepsy?
Lovely.
By Nicastro and Picard. Then the Psychoanalytic Study of Joan of Arc by Francis Baudry. And Joan of Arc's letters, translated by Alan Williamson. That was super interesting. They have like all of her letters that she had dictated. And so you get, I think it's cool because you get a lot of insights into how she saw herself and her mission. Mm-hmm. There was also a great history.com article on her, historicmysteries.com, Encyclopedia Britannica, the National Mental Health Institute.
Oh.
And Wikipedia.
Oh, our personal favorites.
Yeah. So thank you for listening, weirdos. I hope that was educational.
It was definitely educational to me. I personally loved it. And yay. Yeah, like, again, it was so cool to hear more about such a legendary figure.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just one of those people that you hear about, but you might not necessarily know a lot about.
I just love the image of this teenage girl in her white suit of armor on her white horse kicking butt and like getting these invaders out of her country.
It's pretty amazing. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
it's a really cool image in my head.
Yeah, I'm really down if you're down to like watch like movies on her now.
Definitely.
Now
yeah.
That we have backstory.
I want to see that silent film.
That would be really cute. Yes.
That, I mean, God, I love watching silent films. They're so like campy, but so cool at the same time.
Weirdos, if you have any Joan of Arc books, movies, TV show recommendations for us, leave them in the comments on Spotify.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you have any theories on what her deal was,
mm-hmm.
put it in. Right. I love reading them.
This is the place to speculate. This is a safe space to speculate, weirdos. We
absolutely.
Want to hear your thoughts.
And it's not like you're saying, oh yeah, I know this to be fact. This is just you saying, this is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe right, maybe wrong. Who knows?
And we love to hear it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening, weirdos.
Until next time, weirdos.
Adios.
Adios.